Hello and welcome in.
Because he shows them the magic and mystery of science in everyday living.
On Science Mixtape on Soho Radio. Hello and welcome to Science Mixtape with me, Maryam Babisha. For the first time, can I say? So the roles have been reversed and I now have the amazing Kyle producing for me. Hello, Kyle.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good. How does it feel to be on that seat?
It feels pretty comfortable. I've been here before. How does it feel for you being the big chair?
Oh my God, I am so nervous. Oh my gosh, I really hope I don't make a mistake.
No, I'm sure you won't. You never make mistakes.
Thanks, Kyle. So most people think that physicists are people that look like Einstein. So, you know, the crazy science hair and writing equations on blackboards with chalk. But this is not necessarily the case. Physicists are people like you and me who are interested in how the world works, and some of them want to use their science to make a change in the world. With physics, you can try and help solve our energy problems or tackle climate change or make the technology that we use today. So my guest today is Mark Langtry, also known as Mark the Science Guy. He's a YouTuber, model, footballer, and theoretical physicist. He wants to spread his physics knowledge and get others to catch the physics bug so that they can help make a change to the world with science. But he's also changing the typical stereotype of physicists. So welcome, Mark. Hello.
Thank you so much. How are you? It's lovely to be here. Thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to it.
I'm excited for the show. So today, Kyle, you'll be giving us our brain teaser. So what do you have for us?
Indeed. So the brain teaser today is, what five-letter word can have its last four letters removed and still sound the same? That's what five-letter word can have its last four letters removed and still sound the same. If you know the answer to that, get in touch at Science Mixtape and we'll, maybe we'll have a prize for the answer or something.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, we never do that. Ooh, a prize.
Yes, so please do tweet us. Also in the show, Mark, you'll be showing us how we can make our own kazoos at home. So all you need is a straw. So let's get going with the music. So Mark, your first song choice is One Heartbeat by Smokey Robinson. Why did you choose this?
Because it's an absolute banger. No other reason. Great song.
No more words needed.
Sound is a vibration of atoms and molecules that can travel through the air or other objects.
So when I introduced you, Mark, I mentioned that you're a theoretical physicist. So the first question is obviously why physics and what got you interested in the subject?
People usually always think they're like, oh, you must have a fantastic teacher or someone must have inspired you. And if they did, I can't remember. I had excellent physics teachers, but I was just always interested in the world around me and how it worked. And I felt I lived in an environment that allowed me to pursue that, to always question why and to find out. And no one ever told you things have to be this way. They always kind of encouraged me to question and to be curious about how things worked. And that kind of just grew. And it became more and more interest as I found out more and more things. I was like, oh, that's really cool. And how does this work? And the more you find out, I think every one of us are natural born scientists and we're always curious about how things work. So if you're just in an environment that is encouraged and help flourish, then I think you can continue asking questions for the rest of your life. And that just developed into such a passion that I wanted to find out more and more by studying it in college.
Nice. So was physics always your favourite subject at school?
I like engineering. I was actually going to be a mechanical engineer. I wanted to do, I like building things. My dad had a shed out the back and we would go and build things, but physics is so much a part of how things work that I just wanted to get down. I got inspired and got interested in maths and always fascinated by the universe, looking up at the sky. And it was just when I was like always interested in astronomy that I found theoretical physics for me kind of combined everything that I wanted to do. It was maths and it was the physics behind everything, the laws of the universe from the very, very small to the very, very large. And I was like, that's perfect for me.
So you were telling me before your favourite celestial object. So what is it?
Okay, it's the moon, right? Okay. I'm gonna go there because I know there's lots of cool stuff out there. But the moon is ours. It's right there. You see it all the time. It's close. It's cool to see images of other stuff. Maybe if I got a telescope where I could see like Jupiter or Saturn or some of the moons. I'm like, cool, but the moon is right there. Yeah. I see it all the time. I feel like I have a relationship with the moon. Do you ever go like, sit out on a night and you just stare at the moon and you talk? It never talks back, but it listens. Like the way, that's why I'm a kind of a cat man. I love cats.
Cats. Okay. Well, I have a constellation, I think Orion. Orion's like my mate. Aww. He's always there. Like every time he comes back, as the winter comes around, I'm like, it's getting cold, but hey, my friend Orion's back.
Won most fashionable at last year's Star Gossip Awards. Orion did. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. I feel left out. I don't have a favourite celestial object. I just think everything is beautiful.
Well, that's good enough. I mean, but you need to find one. Maybe we'll find you one by the end of the show. We'll find some like pictures of things and like try and get you a favourite celestial object.
Thanks, you just make this connection with it. Break down barriers. We'll help you find one. We'll get a map. We'll pick
thanks,
one.
Thanks. You're real pals.
Anytime.
So Mark, you've caught the physics bug and you want others to catch it too, but you haven't limited yourself to the UK, so you've actually traveled around Europe in a science bus. Tell me more.
This was, I think, the coolest project I've ever been involved in. It was a citizen science project funded by the EU involving two scientists traveling around in a science bus, which was a camper van full of experiments and workshops and DIY demos, which you would conduct at festivals, cities, marketplaces, schools all around Europe.
Wow.
So you would live and sleep and do experiments all from this camper van. Just myself and one other Dutch scientist going around spreading the love of science.
Wow. So what countries did you go to and how long were you there?
So I was on the bus for almost 3 months with a scientist I had never met before. Right.
Okay.
Never met before. And you basically sleep in the same bed. Like, it's the same bed. And we were in the Netherlands, Germany, Austria, Slovenia, Italy, France, Spain, Belgium. I think that's it. But like a big loop of Europe.
Yeah.
And we just went everywhere. It was awesome. I met like thousands of people. In Slovenia, we're at like the Pippi Longstockings Festival,
okay,
which is just 30,000 Slovenian children dressed as Pippi Longstockings.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Or the most terrifying thing I've ever been.
A bit mental.
It sounds like the thing if you didn't know what was happening and you arrived and you kind of came out of your tent and were just like,
if you just woke up like,
what is this?
Dear God. But everywhere was so different. Each country had its own culture and own people, and just to enjoy science with every one of them. But one of the coolest aims of the science bus was to collect what's called folk remedies.
Okay. Right?
That was very difficult to explain in other languages, by the way. But it was to ask people questions and get solutions that they would use to solve everyday problems and issues. Kind of things that your grandparents would tell you to do. Things you should drink if you're sick, like if you get a cut on your finger, how to promote healing. All kind of like natural remedies. And we would collect them from different countries and then find out that sometimes different people had different solutions to the same problem, and sometimes the solution was not even based in science.
Oh, wow.
So it's just getting people to question why they do things.
Mm-hmm. So will the science bus happen again?
I hope so. But it was an EU-funded project that lasted 5 months, and it kind of fell into the category of the overall EU citizen science project, which is it's a five-year project, so it runs until 2020, so in the Horizon 2020 project. And within that citizen science outreach project, there's hundreds of projects, and the science bus was just one of them. So there's hundreds of things going on, but I think the science bus was the best.
This really does sound like the coolest thing. I wish I was like in Europe and like saw this science bus. It sounds so cool. So you even got to speak at the European Commission in Brussels about the science bus. That must have been so exciting to meet others that were supportive of your work.
One, I was honoured to be asked, and almost like, me? But it was to tell a very important story, and the story of the science bus. So it was funded by the people at the EU, and it was to show them the results of how much impact this had on a huge scale. And what was really cool is they gave us film equipment to film and document and blog the whole journey. And like, there were some amazing moments caught on camera. Beautiful moments of, like, you could almost see the spark being ignited in some children. And it's like, oh my God, we changed their life. These people may become scientists, or at least they appreciate and understand science and have this love. And that just happened over and over again. It wasn't even hard to do. People love science. People want to do experiments. It's natural. It's fun. It's enjoyable. You learn something and you get to do it with friends. So to go to the European Union and speak at such a a prestigious a place about an amazing project to hopefully get something like that, not only going again, but to have that normal in our society that we can have people like a huge impact on a large amount of people. So to go and to tell the stories was not only really enjoyable, it was quite emotional. I should show you some of the videos. Some of the videos are amazing. We had a 9-year-old girl who had never soldered before, ever, and was the first person to complete a fully working USB mobile phone charger.
On
the whole journey, like adults couldn't do it. It was very difficult. We had different levels of workshops, and she just came in, and we were just like, "Oh no, this is going to be tough." And just boom, sat down, just in the zone, soldering for the first time ever, and
That's
then it
amazing.
Worked. And we attached it to her bike because it was dynamo powered. You could power and we attached it to her bike, and she cycled away. With it working, and she's like, "Oh my god, that was an unbelievable moment."
Do you ever get people write in and say that you've been really inspirational, or like they really appreciate the science bus?
Like lots, and I think sometimes that catches you off guard because it is enjoyable. You can see other people enjoying it, but sometimes when it's written down, you're like, "Oh, like this is having such a bigger impact than we ever thought it could have." And that's sometimes when you sit and you're like, "Whoa, this is really important that hopefully stuff like this happens again and there's more of it," when you really see how it's changing people's lives and in an enjoyable way. Everyone just enjoying and learning together about the world around them is fantastic.
That sounds absolutely amazing. So I know that you also work for the Institute of Physics, so you're based in Ireland. So what kind of events do you do with them?
So we do a lot of physics outreach events, and I got involved with them very early, a long time ago, too long, I won't mention when, and I was actually in the BT Young Scientist. So the BT Young Scientist competition is a competition in Ireland. It's the largest student science competition in Europe, and I was at that. I had a project there, and I walked over to this stand. There's lots of stands from different companies there, and they had a football. And I love football. So what they were doing is they were using a radar gun to measure the speed of how fast people could kick a football. And I was like, "Get out of the way, I got this." So I went up and they were keeping like a leaderboard, and I just like rocketed to the top. And I was just like, boom. And I was walking away and they're like, what are you thinking of studying? And I'm like, "Physics." And they're like, "We're the Institute of Physics." And I was like, "What?"
No way.
And from that moment, I've worked with them every year. So I started off volunteering with them at the Institute of, or at the Young Scientist, and just started working with them from then. And we work at just outreach events all over Ireland. They can be workshops or national events, just inspiring students to take physics as a career option and showing them what a physicist does, what the different type of physicists do, the different jobs you can get from physics, and just basically to be a resource for people for more information and inspiration about physics.
Wow, that sounds absolutely amazing. I love everything that you do. Okay, so I think we've had a brief introduction to the work that you do, and I think it's time for your second song. You chose Every Breath You Take by The Police. Why did you choose that?
Like, that's the song you play on a sunny afternoon. You just roll the windows down in your crap car and put your really cheap Polaroid sunglasses on and just rock out. And anybody can look cool with this song playing in their car.
Sound cannot travel through a vacuum, because there are hardly any particles to vibrate. This is where the phrase, "in space, no one can hear you scream," comes from.
All right, so now we know why Mark got interested in physics. But what got you interested in science communication? Why do you feel the need to spread the word about science?
It all actually started working with the Institute of Physics, because I shared my love of physics with them. And working with them, I found out that the numbers of people taking physics as career options and studying physics in third level and even in secondary school, you have an A level here, were severely declining. And I couldn't really understand why at the time. I was like, what's going wrong? Something's going wrong somewhere. And I always enjoyed talking about physics and sharing that love of physics with people. And I decided that I felt an almost a responsibility to show physics in the light that I saw it. And at the time, I was very confused. I was like, where is it going wrong? Where is the disconnect between science and society? Where is this image of physics in particular coming from? And where is the problem? And that kind of, I got into that area more and more often, or more, which opened up different doors for me to realize that I work with a lot of young people in schools. And I would just ask them, I would learn from them, like, where are they getting information from? What did they think about this? What did they think about that? What's wrong with that? And I worked with young people in schools for a very long time, and I just realized the huge disconnect that there was between science and society, that they didn't feel it was practical to everyday life. And I couldn't be more the opposite. So I just felt an importance to get involved in communicating science. And also, I just love doing it. And to share that with other people is just fantastic. Because really, everyone loves science, whether they know it or not. Sometimes if you say, let's do science, they go, oh. But if you don't even mention the word science and just do an experiment, it goes down great. Mm. So I felt quite a responsibility to communicate science. One, because I really enjoy it, and I find that it helps other people as well.
Awesome. That sounds perfect. So, Mark, you almost have 10,000 followers on Instagram. I know you're probably like cringing like right now, but and you call yourself Mark the Science Guy. Do you think that sharing science on social media platforms is the way forward for science communication and getting people interested in science?
I wouldn't say it's the way forward. I think it's very important, though, that science has a presence on social media. Saying 10,000, I'm like, oh. So sometimes I find that, you know, on gravestones now, it's just going to tell you, like,
number
Jim,
of followers.
This year, yeah, 10,000 followers on Instagram, 41,000 likes on Facebook, and everyone will judge them from that.
I think what would be worse is if you had, like, a live graph of, like, the number of followers from, like, the time of your death slowly declining over time as people just unfollow you.
Oh, no. This guy's not tweeting at all anymore. What's going on?
Yeah, unfollow.
did you take any inspiration from Bill Nye, the Science Guy? Any relation?
I'll tell you, any relation, I'd love that. This is, like, Mark, this, it doesn't even rhyme, right? But I had another name, right? It will go unmentioned. And I was in the science rally. And science
make one up. Mark the Science Shark, something like that.
Shark sounds, nothing too good rhymes with Mark. Shark sounds pretty good. I could have used you a long time ago.
But then you'd have to dress up as a shark. Like,
yeah, like, I'm not even, like, what's got to do with physics or science? It's just like sharks. But I was in the science gallery, and as I love asking kids their responses to things because they're so honest. And I had a different name a while ago, and I used to have little stickers that I would hand out as I did an experiment on after it, and I just told the kid, and they, like, they're surrounded, like, by, like, their family, and this long, I don't know what, they were like six. And I just handed it out, and they just go, that's crap.
Oh.
And I just went, you're right. This is terrible. And
cutting to the truth of it.
Yeah. Oh. It was like a quirky name that I come up with. I was like, ooh, this is kind of stylish and cool. And the kid was like, just like, that's crap. So I decided to come up with something that can't be confused with anything else.
Right.
You pretty much know from the name what I'm doing.
That's true.
And that's enough for me. I don't need a quirky name. Sometimes an accurate name is better than a good sounding name.
How about, because you guys are going to find me my favourite celestial object, me and Kyle just find you a new name.
Wait, what's wrong with the name?
Nothing.
Okay, I'm going to go home and change it now.
I like the name. I think sharks are cool.
Sorry, what?
No, it's a great name. It's a great name. It's you know, it's pithy. People know what you do. It's very nice, you know.
Oh,
can't be confused
nice.
With anything else, like sharks. So I like it.
I'm sticking with it.
Okay. Back to why you do why you share science on Instagram. So what stuff do you share on Instagram?
So really, I found out that that's where young people are communicating. That's where they're getting their information from. And there's a lot of advertisers and marketers on this, and everybody's competing on social media. And it's an excellent platform, just used sometimes incorrectly by a lot of people. And it's a fantastic platform. And that if this is where people are directing their attention and there are no scientists on it, then there's a huge problem there. That where are they going to get their information from? Where are they going to get inspired by science? Science doesn't come up in front of their face. at all anywhere. And sometimes you have this clickbait of people who'll just post incorrect information. So you might as well have actual scientists with a presence on it. I think that's really, really important that we compete on social media, because it can be very enjoyable as well, as you've probably seen. It's a lot of fun as well to make videos and to communicate. So what I generally do is just make science-related content, short videos, pictures, all with up-to-date, relevant, educational and entertaining science media content.
Cool. So is there anything that you say grabs people's attention? Do you do like big experiments, or how do you get people interested in your content?
Generally, I'm fascinated with science things, and what I decided to do is not get distracted and kind of think too much. Do what inspired me and what I really enjoy, and try and pass on that enjoyment to them. And sometimes I don't do massive explodey things. I am a theoretical physicist, so I do like the theory behind a lot of things and explaining that. And there's so much cool things you can explore and kind of unique, and using your creativity as well, because I think using your creative side is very important for a scientist. Some of the best scientists are really creative people. So I find that it helps to also be able to communicate what work you're doing, which is an unbelievably important skill for any scientist to have, whether they're applying for funding or if they come up with something cool, they have to tell people about it, and people have to understand. So I think it's not only really useful, but it can be entertaining and enjoyable as well.
Also, I think, so for you, you not only do physics, so alongside that you're a footballer, you also do some modelling, and you're on YouTube as well. So do you think that ties in well, that people can see that you don't only have to do physics, like you can do other things alongside it?
Definitely. And I've been playing professional football in Ireland since I was 18. And I've always, initially at the start, kept the two things completely separate, because that made sense. I thought at the time, I was like, well, they're two very different things. But I soon realized that they're really not. And when I started combining physics and football, I started making physics and football demonstrations. And I was like, oh, this works. This is great. It allows people to make a connection between your daily life, what you're doing, something you're interested in, and science. Mm-hmm. That you can use the physics behind David Beckham's free kicks, or the physics behind the way Ronaldo kicks the ball, the way football flies, how they design football boots and footballs, and kind of see how interesting and kind of people respond to that. I thought it was cool. And other people really responded to as well. So it kind of grew from that, from combining your daily life with science as well.
Is it the Magnus effect?
The Magnus effect
is amazing.
That's David Beckham.
That's so good.
Or that's his style. But if you've seen the new technique, like Ronaldo or Gareth Bale will kick. So Magnus effect is putting spin on the ball.
Yeah.
But now you have the knuckleball effect, which is like a new method of kicking a football where you try to minimize spin. So if you put spin on a football, it follows a predictable path and a predictable trajectory. If you kick a ball with minimal spin, you have erratic side forces and up and down forces that cannot be predicted. So the ball travels completely erratically through the air, which goalkeepers cannot predict what way the ball is going to go. So
this knuckleball comes from baseball, and the idea is that rather than throwing it and spinning it, you actually put your knuckles on the surface of the ball, and then when you throw it, it doesn't spin. So it goes all the way down, and that's when it wobbles around.
Oh, it's definitely from baseball, but I didn't know that. Yeah. Didn't know that's why it's don't call the knuckleball.
Flick your fingers out and stop it spinning. Whereas if you were holding it, the ball would like roll down your fingers and spin.
Yeah.
So instead, you kind of grip it so that you push it.
Yeah, but that's what they use it in baseball.
Fact.
Yeah.
But they're explaining them and realizing there's loads of science papers on it as well, studying the aerodynamics of football flight and the knuckleball, which is really, really interesting. Showing that, I'm sure Ronaldo didn't sit down and work out that if he kicked the ball with no spin, there would be erratic side forces. Maybe he did, I'm just not sure. But the great thing is that someone found out, and the information travelled along that find maybe we can kick a ball without any spin. And then footballers can go out and practice this, and then you've seen some phenomenal goals scored now, and now they've changed the design of footballs to maximise this effect. So showing how science can improve and change your sporting performance as well.
Wow, some really cool facts there. I think it's time for your next song.
Yeah.
So you chose Slide by the Goo Goo Dolls. Why did you choose this?
Do you ever pick a song that you just reminds you of? I came across on an airplane I was on an airplane. Every time I hear it, it reminds me of being on the airplane to America. And one, it's a great song, but I just like it. It's just nice.
Could you whisper in my ear the things you want to feel? I'll give you anything to feel it coming. Do you wake up on your own? I wonder where you are. Live with all your faults. I want to wake up where you
Sound waves travel into the ear and cause little bones called the ossicles and little hairs in our ears to vibrate. This is how we hear.
Oh, cool fact there, Kyle. Thank Very you. Cool. So, Mark, you mentioned that you do a lot of kind of do-it-yourself experiments on the science bus, but you have a little quick experiment here for our listeners that they can do at home. So what do they need?
It's very simple. You need a straw, and we're going to make a kazoo as well, which is a straw, elastic bands, and lollipop sticks.
Cool. Okay, so everyone get your straws out.
So easy.
The first thing that we're going to make is the straw whistle. Yeah. Okay, so what do they need to do?
Get your straws out and get your ossicles ready. All right, so it's very simple. It's a straw whistle, right? And as you said earlier, to create sound, all you need is a vibration. So it's very, very simple. And what we're going to do is just cause vibrations in the straw. And that will cause vibrations in the air around us, which will travel to our ear, and we'll be able to hear sound. So it's very simple. So you get a normal straw, and usually I just cut it in half. And it doesn't really matter where, but you'll just cut it in half like that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's one end. And you're going to choose just one end. I'm going to choose this end, and you're going to make it really, really flat just to help with cutting. And you're going to cut a specific kind of shape into the top of it. And it's just kind of a triangle, just like that. Oh, that was nice. Good sound.
Okay, so guys, you want that to be like super pointy, and it should look like the top of like a house roof, basically, on the end.
A very pointy house roof.
Yeah.
And what that is, it's going to act like a reed in a music instrument. So that's the bit that's actually going to vibrate in our mouth. And we make it really flat. So you can use the back of the scissors just to make it really flat as well. It just kind of weakens the straw and allows it to be able to vibrate. Now, to make it vibrate, you got to blow through it.
Okay.
So you're going to blow air over it, and it's going to cause it to vibrate. And if it vibrates, it will create vibrations in the air molecules around it, and we will hear that as sound. So
are you going to give us a demo?
I'm going to test it. Yeah. I'm on the spot, but I'm kind of a pro straw whistle player. So I've actually turned this one into a tin whistle, but we'll go for it. So I'm going to put it into my mouth like this and just blow over, and it's going to vibrate and create some sound. How awesome is that? And it's just a straw. And it's kind of cool. You can feel your lips tingling and vibrating as well. And
can you play us like your favourite song?
You know Beethoven?
Yeah, no.
Imagine. But what's really cool is that I've made kind of a tin whistle out of it. So basically there's a sound wave travelling through this. Okay, and you can change the length of the wave by blocking certain holes. So that's how like a tin whistle works. So if I have them fully open, the length of the wave will be different. And if I block some of them, that will change the length of the wave. And if you change the length of the wave, the wavelength decreases, the pitch and the frequency. The frequency will increase and the pitch will go up. So I'll have some tin whistle playing that you can hear as well. So
I love that so much. It's so entertaining.
So there's an instrument called launeidas, which is like this level 17 Wikipedia. Sorry, go. We were just talking about how one of my hobbies is just going on Wikipedia and just reading the articles. And launeidas are kind of like, they're like a bagpipe without a bag that they play in northern Italy. Ooh. And they have like three pipes that they shove into their mouth, right, and they play them, and it genuinely sounds
like that.
I should just get straws.
Wow. So you should be a pro.
You're like a professional launeidas player.
Yeah.
That sounds nice
as well.
Yeah,
because everyone is just listening, right? You can't tell that it's a straw. All right, so you also have a second instrument. So
this is the kind of the more advanced version. It's a kazoo. And once again, all you need for that is... Yes, that is all you need.
Wow. So we're having some... Whoa!
Sorry, guys.
We were just checking time. The stream, and so we had that awful delay listening to ourselves. It's not very nice, is it?
In some space-time continuum warp or something.
All right, back to the kazoo. Yeah. What do you have?
So I have two lollipop sticks, and I have elastic bands and straw again. So what I will do is use the elastic band. So again, to make sound, we just need something to vibrate. And what's going to vibrate in this situation is the elastic band. And all we're going to use the pieces of straw for is to, again, change the length of the sound wave.
Okay, so we'll post a video of this just so you know what's going on. But essentially has like two lollipop sticks, putting the elastic bands on.
Yeah, so the elastic band is around one of them. And what I'm going to do then is put a little cut piece of straw around here.
So he's putting the straws on the ends of the lollipop sticks and then putting the lollipop sticks together.
Yeah, so I'm terrible at explaining this. It's like, I can see it, so it's fine.
It is difficult.
And then I'm going to just...
So he's wrapping a little elastic band on top of one of the little straws just to secure it in. And you're basically making like a little gap between the two lollipop sticks with the straw.
Yeah, and I'm going to put the other one.
Putting on the second one now, and then wrapping it up again with one of the elastic bands. So now we're kind of left with something that looks like a skateboard.
And a skateboard. You got to put this one under the elastic band like that. And what that does, the elastic band, it just goes diagonally through. So it allows it, when you blow through it, the elastic band will be able to vibrate. So you're just creating a little space under so you can have air travel above and below the elastic band, and that will create the sound. So I'll just close it off with the other elastic band on the other end, and then we'll test it out. This is like the advanced stage, make your own science instrument. So we'll test this one out, and hopefully it's quite nice, but we'll give it a go. Kind of sounds like a duck. Make your own duck instrument. But if I don't change the position of the straw, you'll kind of hear it's a very specific frequency.
Yeah.
I'll call that a D minor. It's not. I take that back. I don't know what it is. But by moving the position of the straw, I can change the length of the elastic that is vibrating, and that will change the length of the sound wave, and that will change the wavelength, which will change the frequency, and it will alter the pitch either up or down depending on the distance that I move it. So it'll sound more like this. And you can kind of hear some of the pitch going up and the pitch going down.
Yeah.
So if I make the elastic band shorter, that makes shorter sound waves. So they're higher frequency and higher pitch, and it'll sound like. And if I make the elastic band longer, you have a longer sound wave, which will have a lower frequency and a lower pitch, and it'll kind of sound like.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Such a difference.
So you can.
I really love this, I really hope everyone listening tries this out. Please
it's
send us
simple.
Some videos.
Yeah.
We need to have a rendition of what? Swanee Whistle and Kazoo, right? The famous.
That's my next song, actually.
Oh, thank you so much, Mark. That's amazing. So I think it's time for your fourth song. You've chosen, I think it's Jukebox Hero by Foreigner.
This is the one I put in my ears while I'm cycling to work in the Science Gallery. This is what I cycle through town. It's very dangerous in town, and this gets me in. Standing in the rain with his head hung low, couldn't get a ticket, it was a sold out show.
A sonic boom is a huge explosion caused by the pile-up of sound waves when an object is travelling faster than the speed of sound.
Science News!
If laser could rip apart empty space.
Global Seed Bank reaches 1 million deposits.
Silicon Valley welcomes superconducting X-ray laser.
Wild horses we'll not ride them someday.
All right. So my first article is about a laser that can rip apart empty space. So physicists from Shanghai in China are breaking records as they make the most powerful pulses of light in the world, and they do this all in a cramped laboratory in China. So the Shanghai Super Intense Ultrafast Laser facility is the home to this beast of a laser. In 2016, the physicists recorded a power of 5.3 million billion watts, where each pulse lasted only a trillionth of a second. So by the end of this year, they hope to reach a whopping 10 million billion watts, which is equivalent to 1,000 times the power in the world's electrical grids combined in just one pulse. I can't even imagine a laser like that. That's like that can cause some damage, I think.
Yeah. Do we have like intensity? Do you know how intense it is? Is it like peak intensities or something? Because I know something like some of these powerful lasers,
yeah,
they have their intensities are kind of like similar to the output of the sun. Wow. But
yeah,
condensed
on like the end of like a pin head.
Yeah, yeah. I think one of the ones I was looking at was condensed to like the same size as the ceiling of the room you're in right now. Right. Oh, so Lord. It's just like insane amount of intensity, but it's concentrated on such a tiny area, such a large amount of power.
That would hurt.
Yeah. It probably would hurt. Yeah. It would certainly sting. I think is probably the right word there.
They've got creams for that.
I hope so. The thing I had was is about the global seed bank. So okay. This is amazing. There's a global seed bank, which is part of the Crop Trust, an international organization. They're responsible for preserving the diversity of the crops that we have for things that we rely on for food. And the bank itself is on Svalbard, which is an island up in the Arctic Circle in Norway. And it opened in 2008, and it's kind of like a fail-safe storing for the seeds that are really important agricultural products. But they've reached 1 million seeds as of a couple of weeks ago.
Wow.
And that this means that 73 institutions have contributed over the last 10 years. The most recent deposits are things like black-eyed peas, different varieties of rice and maize, and Bambara groundnut, which I have no idea what it is, but it's apparently a drought-resistant crop grown in Africa. They also deposited Hunter barley, which is used for Irish beer and whiskey.
Yes, it is.
So it's important information. Yeah,
it's very important to retain that crop so that we can, you know, keep drinking.
Okay, so my next news piece is about lasers. So I'm actually going to go off to Stanford and do a project there at their X-ray laser. So I wanted to just give them a bit of promo. But Silicon Valley, which is where this lab is home to Apple, Google, and other big brands. But it's also home to the longest linear accelerator in the world and the world's first ever X-ray laser. So this X-ray laser is located in California at the SLAC National Accelerator Laboratory, which is operated by Stanford University. And it's also really close to Google HQ. So this X-ray laser isn't like your normal laser. It actually works by accelerating electrons to super fast speeds, and then they wiggle them, and then they produce some X-rays. So SLAC Lab and their X-ray laser is actually undergoing a huge upgrade, and I'll be part of this upgrade, which is super exciting.
Nice.
And recently they received these cryo modules. So what they are is basically cavities for these electrons to go through, and they're super, super cooled down to really low temperatures, and that helps the electrons to move really fast without any resistance. So I'm excited to go off there, and big science is going to happen. So
that sounds really amazing. Cool. One of the ones that I really, really wanted to talk about, which is wild horses will not ride them someday. And so this is the last thought to be wild horses of Central Asia are actually descended from animals domesticated about 5,500 years ago.
Mm.
And an international team, which has included Ludovic Orlando of the Natural History Museum in Copenhagen, they analysed the DNA of these groups of horses, which are known as Przewalski horses of Central Asia, and showed that they actually share ancestry with the Batai horses of the 4th millennium BC.
Wow.
Good Lord.
Yeah, they thought there were three species of horse, the modern kind of domestic horse, and there's Eurasian wild horse, or the tarpan, that went extinct in 1909, and then these were the Przewalski horses. So we thought that they were all separate species and only two of them survived, but actually we think that maybe the wild horses are just domesticated horses that have escaped. So they're not technically wild horses. They're called feral horses.
Oh.
Like the Mustang in America or the Bumby in Australia. They're like just wild, feral. Not wild, feral horses. Okay. I just found that really fascinating. Obviously went into a Wikipedia hole.
Yeah,
and should try and find that one.
I think that's all we have time for science news. So we're going to have Mark's next song, which is Good Times Roll by The Grizz.
Oh, this is a gym song. Mm-hmm. You will just be jumping up and down after this. Or if, maybe not.
I'm sure you will. Dogs can hear sounds that humans can't. They're able to detect higher frequency noises.
Wow, it's been an amazing show, Mark. We've had a great chat about the work that you do. So where can people find out more about what you're up to? Maybe you have some upcoming projects that people want to know about?
I have a lot of kind of cool things in the pipeline, and videos is what I'm doing at the moment. So I'm on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, at Mark the Science Guy, or... We might be changing the name after this. No, we're not changing the name. It's
keep
Mark.
The name.
I'm
keep
keeping the name. Keeping the
it's
name.
It's a good name.
It's a good, strong name.
Sorry.
No, you so that's it, at Mark the Science Guy on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And that's where I have different types of science content, and it involves collaborating with other scientists, highlighting their work, all the cool thing that's going on around the world in different science institutions, and then picking daily topics, kind of different things, explaining the science behind everyday life, and just different videos, all enjoying different aspects of science and how it plays a huge role in our lives.
Can I ask, what's the craziest YouTube video that you've put out?
Okay, right. So I did it. Oh, this is going to be hard. I did a show. Do you know you guys have got, is it Britain's Got Talent? Yeah. So Ireland made a version called Ireland's Got Talent, and like I told you earlier, at a much lower standard.
Also, and the name is just crap.
We're changing it. All right, that's it. We're changing it. And I was on that. And I was trusted with a huge amount of liquid nitrogen.
Oh, my gosh.
I was gladly, I can't mention who gave it to me, but I got my hands on a lot of it. And I did the show. Everything went great, but I had loads of it left over.
Okay.
And you can do a lot of cool things with liquid nitrogen.
It's always just dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
don't leave a scientist alone with liquid nitrogen.
And I just put it in my car, like seatbelted it up as my passenger, and just drove to the nearest park, right? And I had this bin and a load of hot water with me from the kettle. And if you had the bin filled with hot water and this huge amount of liquid nitrogen, and because of the huge temperature difference between the two liquids, if you pour the hot water on top of the liquid nitrogen, it turns to gas instantly and takes up 700 times the amount of space as it does when it's a liquid. So it just explodes in this huge amount of gas. And I was just in the park, and there's people walking their dogs going around, and just massive explosion. They were like, what the hell just happened? Call the police. Yep.
Did they come and
try to explain that one to them? They did. I told them to follow me on at Mark the Science Guy.
That is some viral marketing right there.
Oh, wow. Okay, I think it's time for the answer to our brain teaser. So,
yes,
Kyle.
Brain teaser. Okay, so the question was, what five-letter word can have its last four letters removed and still sound the same? The answer is a Q.
Oh.
Q. Q. Oh, Q-U-E. Nice. U-E. Yeah. Remove the last one.
I love cues. Sometimes I join a cue just for things to do.
Oh, God. I hate cues.
Well, thank you for joining us, Mark, for this edition of Science Mixtape. Our producer today has been Kyle, and we have both been joined by Mark Langtree.
Thank you so much,
the Science Guy.
It's been a lot of fun.
Choosing the tunes and educating us about the world of science communication. So if you want to listen to any more episodes, they are available through all the usual podcast providers. You can get in touch with us at Science Mixtape on all the social media platforms. So why not let us know where you like to enjoy the podcast? It could be in your bathroom, I don't know. Or just in your bedroom. So, and let us know who you want to hear from. So if you have any guests that you want on the show, let us know. So, Mark, your final song is Free Bird by Lynyrd Skynyrd. Why did you choose this?
The best guitar solo of all time. It's a long song and it's worth it. Big build-up. Just sit back and relax.
Thank you and goodbye.